Hello and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Freep beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. Gentlemen, it's been exactly 1 month since we last convened for a podcast. What is going on in your world?
I mean, it's been an interesting time with being on and off work for both me and Graham and everybody else. There's not a lot of sports going on. They're starting to ramp up a little bit, but for the most part, I just tried to take my time away from the job to be a little bit away from sports. And it's amazing how easy that is when there aren't any sports going on.
Yeah, no, I'm doing other things outside of the sports world, writing about food, which is my other love, as Chris is well aware. You know, I drool on my
It's not just me. I'm not the only one well aware of this.
Yeah, no, I.
And you're not the only one who obviously is well loved with food
As someone who is 5'8", 270, obviously I am a huge fan of food.
Yeah, that's a good point. You may have us all beat.
I think
there.
I've got everybody beaten in both departments. I remember, so back when Kim Jong-un was supposedly dead or about to die, there was all these comments about how unhealthy he was, and they mentioned his height and weight, and he's like 5'8", like 267. Everyone's like, oh my God, who is this monster because of his body size? And the reading's like, oh my God, oh no. I've got to ask myself some questions here. Yeah, that guy is incredibly unhealthy. Well, in the last month since we last talked, there has still been quite a bit of Michigan State news, and we're going to do our best here to kind of hit on all of those topics and what we got going on today. We're going to talk about the NCAA Division I Council's decision on Wednesday to allow football, men's basketball, and women's basketball to resume voluntary workouts on June 1st. Then we'll do some Josh Langford NBA draft talk. We'll talk about the Curtis Blackwell lawsuit, which had some breaking news. And then we'll talk about MSU players who were drafted, undrafted free agent signings. We'll talk a little recruiting and then a little Osven send the podcast. All right. Well, let's start with the NCAA Division I Council. As I said a minute ago, they voted on Wednesday to allow football, men's basketball, and women's basketball to resume voluntary workouts on June 1st. This is obviously very huge news within our world and with the college basketball world, or college sports world, I should say. What is your guys' kind of reaction to that, and were you surprised that they're really going to get this ramped up here so soon?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say I'm surprised, but I also would caution thinking that this is going to be everybody's back to practice, too. I mean, I think they're taking a measured approach at the NCAA level first to open things up, but also to understand and put it out there that, you know, it still goes back to the conferences. It still goes back to the local municipalities and state governments that are in charge of where each state is individually as lockup. I can't call it quarantine because I don't necessarily think it's quarantine. I mean, you're stay at home orders in most places to prevent things from happening. And, you know, you saw in Michigan on Thursday that Governor Whitmer started to relax things a little bit more in terms of social distancing gatherings of 10 people or fewer. So how does that work? I mean, you can't. At this point in most states, in particular Michigan, you're not going to be able to get 100 football players together to practice. So, you know, after the conferences open up, after the state governments relax things a little more, you may see a few more things. But I think for the initial phases right now, you're talking about limited individual or small group workouts, which, I think for basketball, for men's and women's basketball, it makes a little more sense because you've seen that at the NBA level right now. From football, I don't know how it will work other than maybe weight training. And the voluntary aspect to me, Graham, is the interesting component of this because, and I wrote about this on Monday, one of the things that people don't realize is these athletes are not paid. They're not, this isn't a job. If you've got a high profile guy who could be in the 2021 draft for NFL or NBA, they could just say, you know what, I'm not going to play this year because I'm concerned about that. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that I think that are still to come, but this to me was a step.
Yeah, I mean, because before you can have, right, team workouts, before you can have practice, before you can have games, you got to have the team able to use the facilities and congregate. And what's interesting is, it will be interesting to watch is this happens, is there an outbreak or a case somewhere of a college athlete who's diagnosed, and what is the reaction? Because I think as we go into sports, one of the things that's very clear is it can't be like Rudy Gobert, right? One positive test for COVID-19 cannot be what shuts down everything. We have to be in a place where we can handle that and quarantine and contact trace and all that stuff and test the people around them. And
but even that, though, you saw how quickly there were more than one case in the NBA. So, I mean, it wasn't just simply the one case. It's just the quickness with which it can spread in close contact and proximity, in whether it's living conditions or workout conditions or physical contact of the game itself.
And I think by the time we get to games, if they happen on time, and like college football, which I think is what most people's interests are, we'll have – because what's going to be interesting is you come back for voluntary workouts, which how those look, how many guys can be together, because, it's 10 people allowed around each other, but they still want social distancing, right? So, what those can look like. And then as you start to go into team workouts, there are probably going to be cases before games, right? And where it is minimized, at least to that individual team, and how you handle that. And that'll be interesting to see, too. What's also interesting, Chris, is you're starting to see, and this is a shift in the last week. We went from, will college football start in October? Could everything start late because of this? To Notre Dame, South Carolina, other schools in the ACC, like North Carolina just announced, moving their semesters up and trying, and some saying if they're not moving them up, getting rid of fall breaks, getting kids out and going online after Thanksgiving. They're trying to avoid the second wave now. That's sort of the mindset. Everybody's sort of trying to avoid this thing they can't see and don't really know what's going to happen with. But you get to a point where, yeah, we may be in a spot where college football is actually more doable than college basketball, And so there's just so little we know. I just think that's an interesting move that has happened in the last week, where it was like, can you have people back on campus? Now it's yes, and let's get them back earlier because we fear what's coming down the pike.
Well, and I think if you look, I believe it was Singapore. That they had done a good job of minimizing things, and then all of a sudden they discovered in workers' dormitories that there was this massive outbreak. And that's, I mean, you talk about things that can cause this. I mean, assisted living facilities with the elderly. I think you look at it, and part of it is age, but also part of it is the quarters in which they live. And I think when you talk about sports itself, how are they going to deal with the locker rooms? That's to me a big component of this. You're talking about upward of 100 guys in a locker room sharing the same space, changing, using showers, using restrooms, using sinks, all these facilities that are right there that are part of the daily ritual of sports. How are you going to deal with that? Because
It's cafeteria. It's their dorm life. It's
sure. I mean, shared bathrooms in the dorms. Whether it be a small group in a quad type setting or a open floor plan, which I think Case Hall still has. So there's so many things that they have to figure out before you get to that point of saying it's feasible to get it back. The second wave situation to me also is going to be interesting. I mean, they're projecting, I think, November as a potential for a second wave. But the question to me is that with the current structure of social distancing and everything else, and how would the sports, in particular football, which involves physical contact, which involves sweat, spit, all these things that really come into play when you are right next to someone, that's where things get transmitted. So there's a lot that still has to go into this, from a logistical standpoint. This to me is a good first step. And I think these schools have to project these models. Ohio State has to have their model saying we're going to have operate at 20,000 capacity, but that doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. I mean, they could still go without fans. I just think that's the important thing to understand.
Everybody's got to be flexible, and it is happening, right? Because everybody is an expert is an expert in something else, and even the people who are public health experts haven't exactly seen this. And so nobody, people who are really smart and have figured out a number of situations for a number of other problems in their life or in their careers there, I don't know what we're going to be doing. And so that, I think that's the big thing. And I think that's hard on all of us, right? I think one of the things that it's hard when you're writing about a team or you're thinking about the individual players or parts, or, you know, whether you're running a 4-3 defense or who starts here, it is hard for fans to get interested and excited about something when they can't yet picture the thing happening. You know what I mean? I think that's a mental hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not just the fans. I mean, these coaches have yet to see Michigan State's football team on the field. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about the changeover here. I mean, it wasn't like they had a full off season. I mean, most of that month of February was spent with Mel Tucker building his staff. And then those first few weeks in March were spent preparing to get on the field. So, I mean, it wasn't like they were around workouts or getting a chance to do anything other than watching film. They have yet to see these guys. So that makes it tough. And I think that looking ahead to what could come, you know, you have to be flexible. I mean, think about this. You mentioned that, but we don't still know a lot about how this virus works. They're learning more as we go along, but remember how quickly everyone panicked about surfaces. Well, now in the last few days, surface contact and transmission might not actually be there. It's more person to person. There's an evolution that's going on within the research that's going to dictate what colleges and athletic departments are going to do. So things could change wildly within a week, a month, 2 months. I mean, you could get prepared to play, and research could say something else, something completely different that, you know, sweat could be a transmitter. Then what do you do? You know, that's kind of what you just have to kind of keep an open mind when you hear people saying this could happen, this may happen, that the research is still going to dictate what is going to happen with these colleges to get students back on campus and to get sports going again.
Yeah, we've kind of seen some interesting decisions from universities. Like Notre Dame has moved up their fall schedule. Like the kids are coming in early August and they'll be done by Thanksgiving, for example. I assume that's to combat any return of the coronavirus from the cold weather. But then what are they going to do with the football schedule? Are they going to still play, start season on Labor Day weekend? Or do you think a guy might get moved back to month? Or do you think is still playing in January on the table? What are your guys' kind of thoughts on that?
Well, first, I think that's a plan. I think that they're not going to. I think that they're planning to do that. And again, I think we got to be very cautious with the language. And I think that, you know, you're not saying that this is going to happen. This is the plan to happen. I think that's important that people understand that. Notre Dame's interesting. And I think also the other interesting one on Michigan State's schedule is BYU, because they're both technically independents. You know, Notre Dame obviously has 6 games contracted with the ACC. So if it's going by conferences making these determinations, how does a BYU fit into that when they've got a contract with Michigan State? And let's say the Big Ten says we're only going to play Big Ten games this year. Well, that's a tough spot for both Michigan State and BYU contractually. They will have to work something out with that. Same with Notre Dame with all of their games that aren't those 6 contracted ACC games.
I completely agree. Now, I think I would be surprised if Michigan State winds up in Provo this year. But again, that's just my, again, we're guessing on information now. You know, who knows? I they're going to play college football at some point unless things really go awry, because they have to. When you ask about the spring, for a long time, I thought that was a sensible idea. And I still don't think it's here's the problem with planning for the spring. And as Chris brought up a good word, this is the plan and you don't know. Yeah. But say you plan for the spring and a second wave hits bad in mid-December, and you're supposed to start games in early January playing in Indianapolis, Detroit, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, wherever indoors or whatever you're doing, however you set it up early on. The problem is now you have nowhere to go with that season. Whereas in the fall, if you plan for the fall And what I would do, I think, if I and obviously this is a logistical nightmare, but I would plan for the fall if I were college football, and build a contingency for the spring. And because if you plan for the spring and you plan to skip the fall, and it turns out we get to the fall, and think there is a break where it's not as bad, or you could have played and you don't, and then you get to the spring and it's like, and there are a number of other issues. I think we talked about before, even with the spring, that you have to deal with in terms of, you know, in concert with the NFL draft. And because even guys who aren't top prospects are planning to work out, and that's the dream and that's the goal. There would have to be some real coordination there to get seniors and talented upperclassmen to play in a spring that was leading into an NFL off season of preparation and showing off and all that stuff. So I would plan for the fall if I were them, but I would build in, like, because you don't want to start that one if something breaks down. I would build in ways and ideas and things you can try to put in place quickly if things go awry.
And I've said this, I don't know if I said this to you guys or to others, but I just don't see how you can have a quote season in the spring and then expect these guys to quick turn for the fall season, the regular fall season. I think in the spring, you know, you don't give guys recovery time, and that's not good for their health and well-being. What I would do, and this is my pitch to the NCAA right here, because I know that Mark Emmert's watching, although the NCAA has no say-so over the college football realm, as we learn more and more. But what I would do is make four or five, you know, allot them, instead of having spring practices, allow them to experiment with scrimmages. You know, whether it be four or five, whether it be in conference, whether it be regional, you keep teams in the same regions and open them up small. You know, you can use it as an experiment. I don't think you use it as a season. I think you use it more as an experiment, an opportunity to showcase guys against other teams. And you know, because people have talked about that for years. You know, how could we do scrimmages in spring football in lieu of just the traditional inter-squad scrimmage? Could you bring in other schools? I think that's one way that you could try and be different. I think there's got to be a lot of different things on the table. And I think to me, this is the time to, if you have it, to be creative with some things.
Yeah, I mean, the only concern, and I do agree, creativity is fine. The challenge is, right, it's really about the finances of football and monetizing that with whatever television contracts you are and how many fans you could put in the stands. And that's the trick if you get stuck in a situation where you're dealing with something that's not an actual season. I mean,
if you get to that point where you are talking about that long a layoff, the eyeballs will be there for TV. I mean,
they will be. Yeah, are the TV partners willing to do it? And you know, obviously these are just.
The TV partners were willing to try and get the KBO on, so I think they'll be willing to get college football.
But if you have an NFL season and you don't have college football, and you've had the beginning of an NBA or the end of an NBA, if you've had other things and college football is, like, you know, one of the last things to come back, it won't be quite the hunger that exists in the same way now where Korean baseball is and NASCAR are becoming intriguing to me.
Yeah, and we also don't know the unknowns of what could happen with the NFL or the coming back, or with the NBA coming back. I mean, you could have a second Rudy Gobert situation that shuts everything down again. So, I mean, that's just the unknowns that we've got ahead of us right now.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys watched the Bundesliga at all this past weekend, but like the first couple games, everyone was doing okay with like not high-fiving and contact, you know, after goal celebration, stuff like that. But you could tell as the weekend wore on that it's just natural instinct when you're playing sports to, you know, touch people, high five, that stuff. And that's something that's gonna be hard for people to break, I think.
Well, Graham knows this. How many times have I said over the years when we played softball that this is the year I'm just taking it easy, I'm taking it light, and next thing I know I'm diving up the middle or running, trying to get a triple and sliding with shorts on and scuffing up my legs and realizing what an idiot I am. But it's just when you've done things one way for so long, it's impossible, especially in that. I mean, you can't change your competitive mindset in those situations.
Or turning around and barking at Carroll or Paul Henderson in the outfield for dropping a fly ball.
I never played with Carroll.
That's a good one.
All right, well, before this podcast turns into a horrific description of the LSJ 2019 softball season, let's talk a little bit about Josh Langford. Graham, you broke some news on Wednesday that Josh Langford has expressed interest in returning to the Michigan State basketball team, and Tom Izzo seemed like he was very supportive of that decision.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, if first of all, if you get a guy who's a senior, who's a leader, who is anything close to what he was, it's a huge, huge pickup. And it's funny because, like, you know, Chris has had these conversations with Izzo and everybody, you know, this, it was not even like the, you're just chatting with Izzo and this sort of thing comes up like it's no big deal. I'm like, what? Wait a second, you what? What? And that's, I mean, it's typical Izzo dialogue where he would bury the lead of something like that. But the I think it's potentially a big deal for Michigan State in that it gives you a senior, a veteran who's been through a lot. You see the fan sort of interest in that. I mean, this is the value of guys who've been with the program for a while. I think there are a lot of people rooting for him. He's been through a lot. But if he's the player he was or close to it when he left, he's a shot maker. He's a vocal leader. He's a terrific defender. He's got a lot of sweat equity. He gives you a ton. The challenge is a little bit is perhaps the scholarship situation. If everybody comes back, including Xavier Tillman, you're and everybody stays, you're at 13 then, right? So. So I think that would be interesting, but yeah, Izzo, I think was going to welcome him back and it just makes a ton of sense for Langford because look at all the uncertainty. The one certainty you have is a college basketball program that'll have you, that'll give you a good platform. And the flip side of that, and I think the reason people thought he might go is the idea that he was either just, he'd done enough time in college, or if you don't trust that foot has a whole lot of time in it. And you want to get something out of a pro career somewhere, but what's going to be there overseas? What is the G League going to look? I think there are a lot of uncertainty everywhere. And the most certain thing, although we don't know college basketball season will be normal this year either, but the most certain thing for a guy like Joshua Langford right now is that he's got a pretty good situation in Michigan State in front of him.
Well, and to me, the thing that comes into play here is the timetable. I mean, when you look back at his first injury, I mean, he had it in December of 2018. But he didn't have surgery until February that year. Was off the court until I believe early to late August. Somewhere it was in August of last year. But then he was back on the shelf by October. I think there was some concern that he maybe rushed back. He had the surgery this time in December. So that would put him maybe in a June, July time frame if he hadn't already had a surgery within that same calendar year. So how does that extrapolate out the second recovery from the same surgery in the same area? Does that extend the, I mean, you're going to want to err on the side of caution as much as possible. If you're both MSU and if you're Joshua Langford right now, you don't want to rush him back. You want to get him, like you said, to the point where he is the most optimal player that he can be. The other concern with that is Russell Byrd. And that's who Graham reminds me of with his beard a little bit, is Russell Byrd right now.
I'll take it.
I figured you would. But you know, the foot in particular, this is why it's an issue. I mean, Russell Byrd was never the same player Tom Izzo recruited in high school with the foot injury upon foot injury upon foot injury. I mean, these are your tires. You know, people talk about how much tread do you have left on your tires? That's legit. That's a legit thing with basketball players' feet. Because if you can't cut, if you can't move laterally defensively, which is one of Langford's strengths and hallmarks, if that becomes minimized, then you're not necessarily the same player. That said, I mean, this is still a five-star All-American kid who was starting to play like that in 2018 before the injury. So I don't know. You take that chance. And he's, I believe, right now the only McDonald's All-American on the roster.
I just think, you know, obviously there are some ramifications with what that means for a guy like Rocket Watts. Rocket Watts is still a guy they're not sure how they want to use and what's best for him and what's best for the team with him. And if you have a Joshua Langford back and you have an Aaron Henry back and you have, say, Tillman comes back and you have Joey Hauser there, maybe Langford agrees to do some sort of you know, off the bench sort of thing. You can see that scenario maybe, but you still got a guy like Gabe Brown who's in that role too. There's a lot of stuff that becomes interesting, and you know, we might not have a firm picture of this Michigan State roster moving forward till like August. We don't know right now when players are going to have to withdraw from the NBA draft. We have no idea when the NBA draft is going to be, and so if all that stuff's delayed, when Tillman and Henry have to make decisions is still down the road. And now if one of those guys leaves, it, you know, and you still got the flexibility to bring somebody in, and you can, especially if it's Tillman, you know, you can do a number of different things. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch what sort of the dominoes. I think the roster is very much in flux.
I think too that you know, the blueprint is there for Langford and how they used Kyle Arns last year. You let him, if he is back, you let him feel his way into it, test the foot, come off the bench, play limited minutes early on, ease your way and integrate yourself back in. And then when you are either physically ready or realize that the end is near, you let it go and go as hard and as long as you can for as much as you can. I thought Arns, the way they used him this year, and were using him down the stretch, I thought that was kind of one of those things where you saw how a Langford could fit into the next year's group.
Right. And I think the hope for Langford's hoping he's a bigger role than that, but you're right. The days of what he played 40 some minutes at Louisville or whatever like that, in that overtime, those were probably over. Just not even just because I don't know if his feet could take him, but because you want, the idea is he would like to have a career beyond Michigan State too, and you're trying to give him the best chance for that. You're trying to give him a platform to make sure he can remain healthy. So it's not like he'll take all the minutes from anybody else. It is just interesting when you start to look at the roster. If the roster comes back as is, because Tillman and Gabe Brown come back, Tillman and Aaron Henry come back, and nobody leaves, and I still think it'll be interesting to watch the big guys. And everybody talks about Foster Lawyer and what might he do, but if you look at the roster and where they're thin and inexperienced, you don't want to lose a guy who's played 2 years of Big Ten basketball as a point guard off this roster. The bigs, though, if you get Tillman and Joey Hauser in the lineup, and the way Malik Hall's developed and other things, that's where it gets to be a real. That's the area I would watch more. But if everybody comes back as is, and you're going to put your best five guys on the floor at a time, it would seem to me that Rocket Watts would be at the point.
Yeah, thin and inexperienced sounds almost like you're talking about Marcus Bingham. I mean, when you talk about the bigs, I mean, and he's a great. I mean, because he's the stretch four that Hauser would probably take a lot of those minutes and, you know, minimize the role. So, but they love what he can bring as a shot blocker and as an outside shooter that doesn't necessarily translate to what Matty Sissoko's game is that they'll be getting in terms of the four. I mean, Sissoko's more of a five, you know, but Bingham's got the length of a five playing the four kind of in that Adrian Payne mold. That's a great case in point, though, of Izzo talking about the long-term development of a player with Bingham, that if he thinks about leaving, well, it's possible because of that, the Hauser situation and some of the other bigs, but he also has a chance to blossom into something special later on too.
If I were Marcus Bingham, and this is easy to say as a 40-year-old dude with a 6'2" height and a 5'8" wingspan, because I'm built like a T-Rex. Mm-hmm. If I were Marcus Bingham and I had the maturity of a 40-year-old and the right guidance, and I was thinking about my long-term ability to make money in the game, I would consider doing what they wanted to do with me as a freshman. If Tillman were to come back, I would consider redshirting and spending a year on myself. And, you know, that would give you you'd have 2 years left. Hauser may be a one-year guy there. Tillman would have one more year. You'd have 2 years left after that. You'd have a year to truly just work on your body and build yourself, your skills, and that would be my play. But then again, that would not have been my play when I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
So that's easy said.
And Izzo's done those mid-career red shirts. It's been a long time. I mean, I think Morris Peterson had one after, I believe, his true freshman year.
I think, and, no, I think he did. No, he redshirted normally, but he played for a minute. But Arn, I guess Kyle Arns did when it was injury based.
Yeah, that was, but even not injury based. I feel like did David Thomas maybe do that as well?
Yeah, but his was at knee, right? Wasn't it? But maybe it
It may have all been injury based. Yeah.
It would be an interesting. There might be somebody we're missing, but that's an interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting idea, and it's one that again, I know it's hard for a 19, 20 year old kid to think I'm going to sit out. And Bingham could certainly help them. I'm just saying if maybe even all he needs after that is a year. So I'm not saying it's the best move, but those are the sort of options you could look at.
All right. Well, let's segue a little bit to the NBA draft. You mentioned earlier in the conversation that Aaron Henry has declared for the NBA draft. That has also happened since we last convened for the Spartan Speak podcast. You got him, you got Tillman in the draft. We'll be kind of waiting to see where Cassius Winston could potentially get drafted as well. What is your guys' kind of feel for how the things end for those three?
I do think that the Cassius Winston is going to get an opportunity somewhere and get a long look because he can do it. You really have to use your imagination pre-draft when you look at his frame and his athleticism. But if you just look at his game and moments where first of all, he's a better athlete than people realize. He knows where he wants to go. His vision is incredible. He's a point guard who can shoot, pass, do a lot of things. I just think he's got more skill and feel for the game than most backup point guards in the NBA. And that's essentially what you're probably projecting him as. And if he develops into more than that, great. So I think he'll get a good look from somebody in the second round and probably be on a roster. Henry, I think, will come back. I just don't know. I'm not saying he wouldn't get picked. I'm not saying he wouldn't land in a good spot. It just seems like he's a guy who would benefit from that because he was much more solid late, and he might have had a big march that we'll never see, we'll never know. But there's a lot to him, but I think between the years and in terms of consistent motor, he's got to show. And then Tillman, yes, there are things he could add in the college game that may help him, his shot, lateral quickness, pinching around the rim a little bit. But his last 2 weeks of the season were incredible. And on film, I think it'll be for him, it'll be about what he hears. And because you do see all sorts of reports like late second round, late first round, like that's a big difference between those two things. Is there going to be guaranteed money for him? I think there will be. Ultimately, he's got to decide, does he hear from teams, if I come back and do this, that I am a first round lock and there's a lot more money for me and there's a lot more benefit or not. And if your ceiling is sort of as a draft pick, what you are right now, then go. For him, I truly believe it's probably 50-50 and leaning, staying in.
I'd agree with you on the numbers and percentage, but I also think that there's more to it than just simply that as well. I think people have kind of rushed saying, well, he needs to support his family and everything else, but they're getting by pretty well. And, the one thing about the married housing in Michigan State is it gives him some consistency. It gives him some ability to be with his kids as they're young. My question would be for him is, and I would imagine he's asking himself this, do you want to play an 82 game NBA schedule or be on a two-way contract with an NBA team or in the G League where you maybe don't know where you're going to be on a given week and bounce around throughout the course of the year? Or would you prefer to take that year with your young children and your wife and stay in a stable situation that you're there, work towards your master's degree for some long-term backup and flexibility educationally for when the basketball career does end and then go again the next year. So I think there's more to it than just simply the basketball side of it. And I also think that as I kind of think about it more and more from his perspective, and it is that there's also that component of the stability factor. I mean, the G League life and the NBA life, you're on the road 42 games a season at minimum. And if you're on a two-way deal, it could be even more than that. You're talking weeks at a time away rather than a couple hours, or 2 days away as you are right now in college basketball. So certainly some things that need to go into that beyond the basketball. Henry, I think, I agree with you on that. I think he's this year's Nick Ward, circa 2017, or I guess it was 2018, where he came out of that year, went and tested the draft process, discovered what agents and what front office people and scouts thought of his game, the positives that, he had with it, but also the drawbacks and things he needed to work on to be a long-term pro rather than a draft pick or just a flame-out guy. So, you know, he tested the process that year, came back to school, then went back the following year. So I could see Aaron Henry taking that route. The skills there, I think you've seen that at times. The raw skill and raw talent to be a pro, a next-level kind of guy is there for Henry. But I think I agree with you. The consistency, both motor and performance, is there. And then for Cassius Winston, I think that there's, you know, he had a lot of things that I think we talked with him last Monday. And there were a lot of things that he talked about. I think one in particular that I asked him about was his effectiveness at the next level. And he was kind of saying he's looking forward to not being the guy, you know, not having to be the guy to shoulder everything and play 40 minutes a game. And, you know, remember his knees were bad last year. And, you know, you wonder, you know, where they were at this year going into the stretch run when you start playing back-to-back-to-back games, you know, but the ability that I think he'll be have coming off the bench at the next level and playing in more contained bursts, I think make him a more effective player. But the other thing I think that he talked about is kind of the overarching theme for all three of these guys. When's it going to happen? I mean, the NBA and the Chicago Tribune here Thursday did a story about just how these guys are all in limbo. And Winston talked about that. You know, I'm working out hard right now as if the draft is going on as expected. But if it gets pushed back, because I know they're dealing with the early entrant deadline, you know, they're trying to be flexible with that, but they're also trying to figure out when and where the draft might happen. I've heard possibly August. I've heard potentially September. You know, if you're a guy that's preparing for it, you're kind of in limbo right now because you don't want to, like Cassius said, go too hard for so long right now and then grind yourself to a nub and then try and take some time off, and then all of a sudden they thrust the draft right back on you. So it's kind of a weird process for all three of these guys to get ready and showcase their abilities, but who knows if and when that'll be.
Yeah, and I think Cassius is, you know, maybe more helped by this than Henry. Like, Cassius is a guy who is not going to physically – like, if there's an NBA combine, Cassius doesn't show up and wow you on a measurable. And, right. But he's going to do – you know, he's going to interview extremely well, whereas Henry – you know, when you see him next to other guys and, he does certain things, and I think he's already defensively NBA ready. But the thing about Henry is it would be a shame for him is when you do have some of the skills there, like you're not a knucklehead. You're a really smart guy. You're somebody who sees the floor really well. You have a lot of skills. You may not have the alpha dog personality. You don't need – the NBA doesn't necessarily need that. You can be a lockdown defender and a good role player. But there needs to be, you know, the rebounds per minute for Henry. He plays a lot of time. I mean, there are too many games where he just doesn't impact the game as he could with his athleticism. Those are things that he needs to have a year where he does, I think. And because the shame for him would be, I think so much of his game can grow into an NBA game. The shame would be is if he doesn't give himself that time to grow and doesn't get the proper look. He'll probably get a good look anyway, but doesn't, you know, you get a better look if they got money tied to you.
One. Here's the other thing, too, is they pushed back the June 3rd deadline, right?
Right.
Where does this leave Michigan State? Where does this leave Tom Izzo? Because now they don't have a date set yet for the withdrawal at the NCAA level. You're trying to get some players, or you need to bring in some other guys. It's just you talk about the domino effect of all these things that are going on with the coronavirus. That's another one that's going to affect the basketball program in terms of trying to figure out the roster. You know, are you going to have those two guys back? Are you going to have one of them back? How many scholarships do you have? Is there room for a guy like Kareem Main or Mane? Is there room for a grad transfer like Michigan's adding? You just don't know right now.
Yeah, he said yesterday there are Tuesday – what day is it? Thursday. So he said Wednesday that, you know, it may be August before the roster's set. And that's crazy for most college basketball programs that usually start – practice in September, but it's just going to be that kind of year.
All right, let's go off the court slash field to the seemingly never-ending Curtis Blackwell lawsuit that may actually be coming to an end here now. And more breaking news on Wednesday, this one regarding that. The lawsuit against Mark D'Antonio, Luana Simon, and Mark Hollis has been dismissed. There's been a lot of bluster about this, especially online and through various news articles. What is you guys' reaction to that decision by the courts?
Well, I think that the important thing with this is that the case itself is not done in terms of Blackwell still having a lawsuit in federal court. It's just, I believe, now against the two MSU police officers who arrested him that day at the MSU football building, Simon, Hollis, and D'Antonio are no longer defendants in that case, but also Blackwell's attorneys were removed from the case, so he has to find new legal representation for that other part of the case to continue. That's one piece. Secondly, there's still a case going on in state court with Blackwell suing D'Antonio et al. In Wayne County, I believe. So that's the second part. So it's not gone away, but a big step for those three in terms of Hollis, Simon, and D'Antonio was getting their names taken off that federal lawsuit. So certainly that's a big moment for them and a big victory for their attorneys.
And for MSU as they try to move on. I mean, the thing about, you know, if you're MSU right now, you know, Hollis and Simon and D'Antonio are no longer there, which is amazing to think. Like 3 years ago, the idea that all three of those would no longer be around. Like the thing that Michigan State wants to do is they want to enjoy the Mel Tucker era and let this thing get off on the right. And you know, the when none of the people are around anymore that you're suing, if ultimately I'm not saying the school doesn't have culpability and there's not shame bought on the school if something goes wrong, but it's, you know, you're looking at a new era, right? And that's where I think the school would like the focus to be. And
I'd agree with you on that. As much as they can, they want to put the past in the past. You know, it'll be interesting to see how many of these other cases kind of linger, but I don't think they have the impact because, as you said, the principals involved are all no longer at the university.
All right, let's go back onto the field and talk a little MSU football in terms of the NFL draft and undrafted free agent signings. The draft happened really short, a couple days after we last recorded, so we'll just kind of hit on that quickly. Only two football players got drafted, Josiah Scott in the fourth round by the Jaguars, and then Kenny Willekes in the seventh round of the Vikings. But there were a number of undrafted free agent signings, Brian Lewerke to the Patriots, Joe Bocci to the Saints, Raekwon Williams to the Eagles, Daryl Stewart to the Packers, Cody White to the Chiefs, Tyler Higbee to the Vikings, and Mike Panishuk to the Saints. What stands out there for you guys? Chris, go first.
Well, I think that Josiah Scott playing into the fourth round, to me, was a little bit of a surprise just simply because of his size, but there's no question that his ball skills are what got him there, his coverage ability. And, you know, it sounds like they're going to use him more in a nickel role because of his size, but he'll have that flexibility to work outside and inside. So I think that's going to be a pretty good landing spot for him. Willekes going that late, you know, it's probably not the first round grade that he was hearing, you know, the late first round grade, second round grade that he was hearing, the high water mark of a year before his leg injury. But I think you also have to keep in mind, just in talking with him leading up to the draft, he was probably playing at like 75-80% last year, and still had a pretty good year, just didn't have the same kind of get off. But he was also only 8-9 months removed from that broken leg. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, maybe the Vikings get a steal there. But I think there's concerns about size at the NFL level for a defensive end like that. You've seen other undersized DNs struggle. Like, I mean, even Shalik Calhoun, as great as he was at Michigan State, became more of a 3-4 linebacker in the NFL. Willekes, could he become that? Maybe. And then the other guys, you know, there's good landing spots for most of them. But obviously, I think the big one is Lewerke, teaming up with Brian Hoyer in New England, two former Michigan State quarterbacks, the bookends of Mark D'Antonio's tenure, kind of getting together post Tom Brady era in New England. I think that'll be interesting to see how much Hoyer can teach Lewerke, to have that kind of 10-12 year NFL career that he had, as an undrafted guy. I think that to me is a good fit because of that for Lewerke, as well as playing for Belichick and that offense and everything else.
You went to a place where they don't necessarily care if you were drafted.
Right.
I mean, a lot of places, you know, they really, I mean, this is the same team that got rid of all their other quarterbacks and kept Hoyer as the sole backup to Tom Brady 11 years ago. And so, you know, I'm not saying he's the same guy. And the thing for Lewerke is going to be, man, can he show that accuracy? But he'll you know, he'll be liked in the locker room. He'll be somebody who's a good student. And I think he'll get a fair look there, which is all you can really – all you can really ask. I was surprised that Raekwon Williams didn't go. I really was. Yeah. That was a surprise for me. And really, I mean, I sat next to a guy in Arizona, Raekwon Williams' junior year, in that early season game, who does a lot of, you know, draft coverage recruiting and, you know, different, you know, prospect stuff. And he just loved Raekwon Williams' motor. He's like, draft that guy today. And it wasn't like Williams was awful after that. I don't know if he was as dominating as he'd been at times. He's not somebody who just barrels through you, but I think he's got a chance to be a good NFL player. I would still be surprised. And super nice kid, not a locker room issue.
At a position where a lot of guys can be on the defensive line.
I would be surprised if he doesn't find a way to pick in the league, for a little while. And the other guys,
I was surprised that people talked a lot about his get off, from initial burst off the snap as being a reason why, because he does have that motor. I mean, you see that motor as he plays through things. And I think you saw it in that final game against Boston or against Wake Forest at the Pinstripe Bowl, that he was playing through things and played a pretty ferocious game. But you know, it's the initial impact off the snap that people were concerned about with him. So things that he's going to have to show that he can do in a camp situation against, you know, first against the other undrafted guys and rookies, and then against veterans.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right. Since we last convened for the podcast, Michigan State football has seen 6 football players commit. Charles Brantley, cornerback from Venice, Florida. Michael Gravely Jr., safety from Glenville, Ohio. Hampton Fay, quarterback from Texas. Cameron Allen, a tight end from Texas. Kevin Wigington, an offensive lineman from New Jersey. And Mark Bassett, a punter from Australia. Chris, anything interesting stand out from those 6 commits?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that Gabe Neely is not on that list. And where his future is, a big safety from Florida who was very vocal in his commitment and then kind of scrubbed Michigan State from his Twitter account. But in a graphic, like one of the other guys in his class tweeted out, he's still listed. So, he has not responded to whether or not he has decommitted from this class. I know a lot of people have been asking and wondering that. So to this moment, he's still part of this class, although he is also active in retweeting other offers that he has. So really interesting and weird situation that I'm sure with everything that's going on, both with Tucker's program and just with around the country, that you're going to see kind of some of this where guys are just going to be waffling because there's no football to be played.
Yeah, such a weird 180 for Gabe Neely in terms of all the stuff he was even getting into it with Michigan fans on Twitter and talking about, you know, Michigan State, how great things were going to be in the next couple of years. And then all of a sudden, just hard turn, everything, every other school sent to him, Temple, Miami, and
Florida International,
right. Florida Atlanta. Yeah, all those schools. Like,
he's a 17-year-old kid, right? Yeah. And we presume, I mean, who knows, but some of these guys are older than that. But it's a 17-year-old kid who's got a lot of options, and he's got adults who you like who are trying to lure you to their schools, and everything sounds good. I think this is, you know, what happened in the D'Antonio situation with the way they did not take commits until they were sure and you could not visit other things. That was the exception, not the rule. We really don't know what the Mel Tucker era is going to look like in terms of that, in terms of them going after kids who are committed, in terms of how, I mean, there really isn't, we don't have a sure sense of that. And it's such a weird year. Think about, these guys aren't getting to take their normal visits either. You know, there may be things that change because of that. To me, like, it's one of the reasons just so hard to get interested in a 17-year-old until they sign, right? Because you don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I mean, but that's kind of where we're at right now here in late May of 2020 and all the other stuff. I mean, recruiting is kind of the one thing that's still ongoing. You know, you don't have spring football. You don't have a lot of recruiting in terms of basketball. You don't have a lot of off-season stuff going on with any of the sports because of the shutdown. But recruiting never stops. And the interest in recruiting, of course, now is a little higher just simply because that's pretty much it, you know. And although we are getting some things back, like golf and NASCAR, and who knows, maybe in a couple weeks football will be in limited doses back on the field.
Yeah, I do think a couple interesting notes from the six that have committed in the past month. You know, Mark Vassett, the Australian punter, they're going trying to go that route again. He's 23 years old. It looks like they've got their quarterback for the 2020 class in Hampton Faye, a kid who was injured most of last year. So, and the Spartans, I guess, believing enough in him to kind of take a flyer on him, and see, we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, it sounds like Tucker was involved in identifying and recruiting him early throughout the Colorado during his time at Colorado. So there was that relationship continued. And that's an important place to get into. I mean, what's interesting to me is that, you know, Hampton Faye kind of, you know, that's how D'Antonio got his really first quarterback commitments. You know, he had one in-state with Kirk Cousins, but then he also got Nick Foles late from Texas. And, you know, Foles went on to become a really good quarterback. And there's obviously a lot of quarterback talent there. So, you know, It's interesting to see where these guys are from and how broad-based they've been able to go, even being restricted to not traveling right now.
Yeah, I should note that all six of those guys are three-star players, as is every other player currently in the 2021 class. All right, let's move on to a couple quick hitters here. We'll start with Cassius Winston. He met with the media last week for the first time since the end of the basketball season. All three of us were there. He talked to us for a little over a half hour, I believe, if I remember correctly. Did you guys have any kind of takeaways from what he said and what he talked about, and, you know, kind of how he views his future?
No, it's Cassius being Cassius, right? I mean, I don't know if there's anything really revealing there other than just sort of what the process is like and how different it is. And there wasn't anything I thought was earth-shattering. But you know, I'll be honest, Cassius is one of these players that I've covered that I'm going to miss, just because he's a nice guy and you enjoy those conversations, and everything happened abruptly this year. And Chris would agree with this. Like you didn't plan on your final sort of regular conversation interview with him in a locker room, not to be that after that Ohio State game or whatever. Yeah. You know, I thought you had
to not be at an NCAA tournament setting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, really? I mean, you know, and I think that's what was interesting with that is that it's beyond just him being a nice guy, too. I mean, he's a really smart kid who can talk about a number of different things. He talked about his video game habit that he had and, you know, the things that he's been able to do with his brother. I know him and his brother are living together right now in East Lansing, which is probably good for both of them considering the year that they've gone through. There's just so many things with that I think we're going to miss in our jobs with Cassius Winston, because he has an ability to sum up things big picture and break things down micro that I think both him and Xavier Tillman do, that and put a lot of different things into perspective, both in basketball and life, that's rare. It's rare to get one guy on a team like that, but to have two guys on a team like that with him and Tillman has been for us kind of the spoils of riches in some ways.
Last time we talked, Pierre Brooks had yet to make a decision, and he made his decision a couple days after we last recorded, and he committed to Michigan State basketball. He will be a guard in the next class. Chris, what were your thoughts on Brooks and his commitment?
Izzo's first 2021 recruit. I think that's a building block to that next phase, and shows that Izzo, first of all, has his eyes set on more than just this being his last year. I don't think that there was any, there's always that talk as, you know, maybe Izzo done. And I don't think that, I think that it's kind of lessened here the last few years as he's been re-energizing the recruiting realm and got some kids. And I think Brooks is going to be one of those kind of combo guards that it's electric. He can get to the rim. He can finish. And he wants to be a Michigan State Spartan. I think that's the kind of player you want.
Yeah, he. I mean, he looks like. I mean, he was a top 75, top 100 kid. That not, you know, one of the things that's interesting is they're not going to have the normal Vegas circuit this summer. Kid like that might blow up. Still growing, 6'5", big hands. I mean, that's, you know, it is. There are some advantages and ability to. There, I think there are going to be a lot of guys like that in college basketball. Sleepers that some schools get. Now the shame for all those schools is the new transfer rules change. You may only have them for a year or two, and they'll just go somewhere else if they outplay the level there that they think they're at. But yeah, I think it was a good get. He looks like a real deal in terms of a guy who's not. I mean, there's a sweet spot they've sort of found here, right? You're not recruiting when you recruit a guy like Miles Bridges, who's the rare exception that comes back. You get that guy for a year, and a lot of those championship teams, it's not that you don't want Jaren Jackson, you don't want Miles Bridges, but you also need guys with sweat equity, guys who develop into stars as juniors and seniors. And this guy, I think, has some of that ability.
You know, one thing I think, and I apologize to Phil, because we talked about Kareem Mané earlier, but I don't think we've talked about his decision to enter the NBA draft. So he's another guy that, you know, for a 2020 recruit, his decision is going to be in limbo along with Tillman and along with Aaron Henry as potentially going to college. So that's kind of something just to keep in mind as we enter the next month or two when they figure out what's going on with the NBA draft.
All right. Well, things are falling apart here recording wise. So this might be a good time to end things. And you guys have any final thoughts?
Well, hopefully next time we talk, there will be some clarity on some things. I mean, that's the one thing I'm looking forward to, is having a conversation with both of you when we can say, hey, this looks like a reporting date. This looks like a schedule, and begin to actually, and there may be more news on some other fronts, but begin to get interested and excited about the idea of covering and watching college football and sports again.
Yeah, because, I mean, what really all that we could do is educated guesses and speculation right now on so many different fronts, just simply because of the things that are going on at the highest levels of administrations and colleges. I mean, this is presidents and athletic directors and conferences all right now meeting to try and figure out what's next. And, you know, then what happens next just globally, we just don't know. And it's kind of a weird limbo for sports, and hopefully we do, like you said, Graham, get back to normal where we can talk sports and not speculate sports.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoyed this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_Couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.